Hi, I'm Sky Guthrie, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
We've got Robert Crane.
In 3, 2, 1.
He's a Microsoft MVP, a Microsoft
certified trainer,
an Office 365
specialist, blogger, podcaster, social media enthusiast, and one-of-a-kind speaker who has a gift for explaining tech to the average person so they can understand it.
Hi, I'm Donna Sarkar, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
There's also myself, Mark Keane. All right, let's move on. I'm the voiceover guy, producer of this podcast, blogger, speaker,
an Azure
architect,
and Microsoft
MVP who specializes in helping people with a journey to Microsoft Azure. You are listening to the
Need to Know podcast.
It's your source for the very latest in Microsoft Cloud news, as well as industry guest deep dive conversations all about Azure and Office 365.
Hi, I'm Sonia Cuff, and you're listening to the Need to Know podcast.
We're back, baby. I'm back this time, and joining me again is Mark Keane, who has been running solo for the previous episode. Welcome, Mark.
Hey, Rob, pleased to have you back on. Good to see that you're still alive and ticking.
Have you been behaving yourself?
Yes, I have been, and I hope I did a good job flying solo for the last episode.
So how'd you go with Aaron Thomas?
That was a really good episode. I mean, I might just be biased, but I think it went very, very well. In fact, Aaron's a wealth of knowledge, and once he gets talking, there's plenty of things that we had to talk about. In fact, 30 minutes, the average that we normally go for, wasn't really enough time, but we did sort of cut it short around 35 minutes, but it was a very, very it flowed well. It's a very well-rounded podcast that we did with Aaron Thomas.
So the reviews and the downloads will certainly reflect that, hopefully. So hopefully everybody's got good value out of that. Yep, I think so. So what have we got for people this episode, Mark?
Episode 143. So yeah, well, we'll kick off with the normal Azure news. So there's quite a few things that have actually been announced and released over the past week. The Azure CLI 2.0 is now generally available. So the Azure CLI is a command line utility which runs on Mac, Linux, and Windows. The Azure CLI 2.0 is open source and available on GitHub. Also, if you go to aka.ms/CLI, you will also get a link to download the product. So it's similar to managing Azure resources using a command line interface, similar to like how you do it with PowerShell or in the portal, but it's just another way of doing it. And you can do scripts, you can automate things and stuff like that.
So the reason that they use CLI, because it's cross-platform, is that the idea behind it?
It is, and it also uses a lot of, because it's open source, it uses a lot of bash and command line codes and commandlets that the developers are more sort of familiar with.
Okay, all right, what else in the Azure scene?
The other big news was Azure Stack. TP3, which is Technical Preview 3, has been released. So in case you don't know what Azure Stack is, I mean, you should know what it is by now. It's sort of been around twice before, TP1, TP2, and there's been a lot of news in relation to Azure Stack. Basically, it's Azure in your own data center. And so the last big announcement we had was talking about how they said to everybody that it's going to be a turnkey solution on-premise. So rather than currently at the moment with Azure Pack, where they give you the install disks or whatever else in the software and you've got to set it up yourself and have a bit of smarts around you to do it, it's going to make it so much easier for people. Whereas you've got Lenovo, HP and Dell, and I think Cisco's now in there as well, are the players. And so when it comes out to finally production, Azure Stack, it will be it'll be like an appliance, and so it'll be all pre-installed and everything else. You don't need to worry about the headache of installing it. I mean, I've gone through the install before. I mean, it's not that bad. You just got to have the hardware configured correctly, the right disks, the right sizes and things like that. It is finicky. There is a PowerShell script that you run to set it up, and it just runs through and does the whole thing for you top to bottom. it does take a while. Yes, it's PowerShell. You can sort of kick it off and walk away and it's set up, so it is quite nice. Now, the new features for TP3, deploy ADFS for disconnected scenarios. You can start using Azure Virtual Machine scale sets for scale-out workloads, syndicate content from the Azure Marketplace to make it available in Azure Stack. You can now use Azure D series of VMs. Deploy and create templates with temp disks that are consistent with Azure. Take comfort in enhanced security and isolated administrator portal, which is good. You've got two portals now. You've got one public-facing portal and you've got one private portal as well. Also take advantage of improvements to IaaS and PaaS functionality and use enhanced infrastructure management functionality such as improved alerting and things like that. So we will stick a link in the show notes for those of you that are interested in that.
All right, so why don't we keep going on the Azure theme and do it all in one big block for people so that they can pick their favorite section of the news. So what else we got in Azure?
Okay, so announcing the public preview of Azure Site Recovery Deployment Planner. So with ASR, Azure Site Recovery, it's critical that you need proper deployment planning before a production rollout and things like that, because you've got to set up, you know, the auto recovery plans and stuff like that. It does take a bit. So Microsoft have announced the Azure Site Recovery Deployment Planner, which is going to make life much easier. It's a tool that helps people understand on-premises networking requirements, Microsoft Azure compute and storage requirements for successful ASR replication, and test failover for failover applications. Deployment Planner is completely standalone, so you don't need to install any ASR components first, and it does not impact performance of any production servers, which is good news. The ASR Deployment Planner has three main modes of operation. Profiling, which is over the course of about 30 days, a tool stores various performance counters like read writes, IOPS, write IOPS, data churn, and the hardware specification of the virtual machine. They've also got report generation. So the tool uses profile data to generate a deployment planning report in Microsoft Excel format, and throughput calculation. So it helps you determine what additional bandwidth is needed to provision ASR replication, which is handy because I've had customers before where they've installed or put in place ASR to replicate and backup as a DR solution their on-prem infrastructure, and their link was quite fast but wasn't as fast that it needed for ASR, and what was happening was it was getting up to the 99.9% synchronization sort of status, or 100% synchronization status, and all of a sudden somebody would use the internet. Internet would sort of drop down a little bit and it would drop from 100% down to sort of like 90% or 80%. It would lose that, you know, that synchronization. And so you do have to have a fairly beefy link for that to work. It is a good product. We'll put a link in the show notes to this as well.
Cool. All right. Well, I think that the Hyper-V replication is a really cool technology. Obviously, works on-prem server to server, obviously over dedicated links as well. But when you throw Azure in the mix, it certainly gives you a lot more flexibility, the ability to spin up an Azure machine automatically if there's failover on-prem, failover back. So it is a really cool technology. If you haven't had a look at it yet, certainly encourage you to go and do that. A little bit of setup, a little bit of prep, obviously, to get it up and running, a little bit of bandwidth required to replicate. But the testing that I've done is certainly a good indication that I think that it fits not only large businesses, but can also work for smaller businesses as well. So if you haven't had a look at it, have a look at Site Recovery in Windows and then extend it out to Azure Site Recovery as well for some additional features and flexibility. What else do we have in Azure?
Well, speaking of replication and syncing, Azure Data Sync. So there's an update here with Azure SQL Data Sync. Users can easily synchronize data bi-directional between multiple Azure SQL databases or on-premise SQL databases, or you can do a mix of both. So you can go Azure SQL database to on-premise SQL or vice versa, on-premise SQL to Azure SQL, whichever. So basically, it's a service is currently in public preview and available only in the old Azure portal at the moment. Azure Data Sync will be available in the new Azure portal within the next few months. Several improvements to the service, including PowerShell and REST API support. Awesome. Improvements to security and privacy and enhanced monitoring and troubleshooting. So the service will be available in most regions once it comes out to GA in the Ibiza portal. We'll put a link to that in the show notes as well.
My God, the show notes are going to be so long. How do people keep up, Mark? It's just amazing.
That's why they got us, to keep them informed of all the stuff that's happening.
I don't know if we can keep up these days ourselves, so I'm sure you've got another Azure story for us, surely.
Microsoft brings 5 new Azure services to Canada. So if you remember, was it earlier this year or late? I think late last year, they opened the doors to the Canadian data centers and regions for Azure. So the services they've got: HD Insight, Azure Functions, Managed Disks, Azure Site Recovery, and Azure Backup. So HD Insight, in case you don't know, in a quick refresher, it's a fully managed cloud Hadoop offering that provides optimized open source analytic clusters for Spark, Hive, MapReduce, HBase, Storm, Kafka, and R Server, which is all backed by a 99.9% SLA. That's huge. Azure Functions, in case you don't know what that is, it's an event-based serverless compute platform. Managed Disks, we mentioned this on the podcast a few episodes ago. You don't need to worry about the storage accounts, the limitations and so forth that goes with it. You simply set up a virtual machine, tell it how many disks you want, and let Azure take care of the rest. And also to site recovery and backup, which we've talked about, leading recovering features of Azure. Link to that in the show notes.
More, surely. Another lesson. Come on. There's got to be at least one more Azure story. One more. Come on. I'm sure the listeners can't wait for just one more.
I've got a couple here. I might skip the second line. I'll come back to that in a sec. Auto shutdown for VMs using Azure Resource Manager. So the feature for this was previously only available in dev test labs, or like me, if you're a smart cookie and you could set it up using Azure Automation, it would have been there for quite some time. However, having it in the portal, it's now available. So basically you can do the VM auto shutdown. It's available in the Ibiza portal, which is a current portal, which is portal.azure.com. So all you need to do is go to your VM blade in the portal, click auto shutdown in the resource menu on the left, and that's it. You'll see an auto shutdown settings page expanded where you can specify an auto shutdown time and time zone. You can also configure to send a notification to a webhook URL 15 minutes before the auto shutdown. Details to that in the show notes. And the last one I've got here is, I wouldn't class it as Azure news, however, it's definitely news in relation to Azure, because it makes Azure sound much, much better than what it is, because AWS, the competition to Azure, had an outage, and it went around the Twitter sphere quite a bit, especially in the Azure space, because people were making fun of it, thinking, ha, 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 AWS has got an outage, blah, blah, blah. Jokes going around, stuff like Amazon, Amazoff, stuff like that. But basically, the official word came out, an authorized S3 team member using an established playbook executed a command which was intended to remove a small number of servers for one of the S3 subsystems that was used by the S3 billing systems. The process itself. Unfortunately, one of the inputs of the command was entered incorrectly, and a larger set of servers was removed than originally intended. The servers that were inadvertently removed supported the other two S3 subsystems as well. One of the subsystems, the index subsystem, manages the metadata and location information of all S3 objects in the region. The subsystem is necessary to serve all get, list, put, and delete requests. And the second subsystem, the placement subsystem, manages allocation of new storage and requires the index subsystem to be functioning properly to correctly operate. The placement subsystem is used for put requests to allocate storage for all new objects. Now, AWS have not completely restarted the index subsystem or the placement subsystem in their larger regions for many years, is what it seems. Now, looking at this and what happened, obviously there was human error that ran the wrong command. Now, Rob, you might remember last year, Azure had a storage outage as well, because if my memory serves me correctly, they were doing an update around the globe for the blob storage part of their storage area, the platform. And the person that was running the storage, the update, it ran quite well. It had no problems for the first time they ran it. They ran it and it came back with the all green lights and everything else. It worked quite well. The second time they ran it, same thing. Third time, same thing. So they obviously thought, well, hang on, I've run it three times. It's worked flawlessly and no problems whatsoever. I'll hit the button, I'll run it for the rest of the globe, pretty much. And so that's pretty much what they did. But at the same time, they inadvertently kicked it off, not only for blob storage, but basically for table storage. But yet the update was for blob, not for table. And because of that, was it table or queue? I can't remember. But anyway, it was one of the other ones. It took that offline. So that was human error. Now, that happened last year. So if that happened, you'd think the competition would learn from somebody else's mistake, if it's not themselves, to say that, all right, there's human error involved, we've got to really tighten this up.
I disagree. I think that anything that involves human is always open to error. Unfortunately, it's the nature of IT. Software is written by human beings. Computers are managed by human beings. So we are going to see this no matter where you put it. So even if you put it on-prem, put it in the cloud, obviously the impact is much larger if it gets a cascading error, which we have seen both for Azure and for AWS. We've seen it for all cloud providers. So I think it's just something that we need to be aware of. It's a bit like electricity. I mean, occasionally you get an outage because of a storm or something. So it's always good to have a contingency plan, and you shouldn't abandon your DR planning just because you've moved everything to the cloud. So typically the people who get caught are the people who don't think that things go down in the cloud. But we all know that IT is not perfect thanks to human beings running it, so you should always have your DR plan and contingency ready to go at any point in time.
Well, see, Microsoft, after that event, they actually came out, the response to that was the fact that they mitigated that human error aspect. So How could they mitigate human error, where you're saying before, like, they always need humans to do things, right? But whatever that happened, that process, they've mitigated that. They've basically either removed it, replaced it with an automation step or something.
Well,
so
I disagree. Like, I think at the end of the day, you know, the thinking is we'll never see a stock market crash because everybody learns from history. Well, guess what? We don't. So wherever humans are involved, there's going to be issues, there's going to be errors. We can minimize them, we can do our best, and hopefully the service is improving. And when you look at it, they both are very, very reliable. When you look at the demands, look at the resources, look at how often they're obviously called upon to do something, and you are going to get those outages, like electricity. We take electricity for granted, but we do have outages. We do have traffic lights that go out. Our reliable cars do fail occasionally. So
you live in Adelaide?
Yeah, you do have to plan for this, you know. So, and it's like, you know, the worst thing is for whatever reason that your internet's off for some reason, like your phone line has an issue. What's your contingency? You know, do you fall back on your 3G? Do you go somewhere else to your local cafe to get internet? I think that, unfortunately, people seem to think that computers are 101% reliable. And again, 99.9% is not 100%. Close, yes, but not 100%.
Yeah, well, you're right. I mean, you've got to have that contingency. And you know what? I've been talking to quite a few people, and the way they look at doing things, it's quite a smart way of doing it, is don't put everything into Azure. Yes, Azure do have multiple regions, and when they have outages, generally they are fixed to a particular region, but sometimes there are very rare occasions there's like a global outage. Now, if you can sort of wear that and sort of cope with having a global outage, which happens on the very rare occasions, or so be it. The other way to do it is to spread your load across the two providers. So some like a passive copy running in AWS, for example, and an active copy running in Azure, for example. You could do it that way.
Yeah, but I think, again, you just need to work out what is the more likely scenario. I think you're more likely to lose your local internet than AWS or Azure being down. So, again, part of the DR strategy is planning for the contingencies and working out what investment you want to make in the event of a contingency. So if the rarity of AWS or Azure going down is not worth the investment, is, you know, you've got to make that decision. It just depends on the business. It depends on, obviously, the importance of. If you're a service that's 24/7 and running websites in AWS and you need to be up, then yes, Azure's probably a good fallback, or maybe even your own data center. But probably for almost, you know, 365 days of the year, that equipment's going to be sitting there doing nothing, really waiting for that one occasional outage. So you do need to balance this up. You do need to determine how important it is to you and sort of what level of outage that you can sustain. So in general, I would suggest something to consider, but it's not time, I think, for you to panic about it. I don't think it's going to be a regular event, but these things are going to happen from time to time.
Yeah. Hey, the other thing that just came through email recently too is a whole bunch of MVPs that were announced too. Did you see that email?
Probably. It's somewhere buried in my inbox.
So we're both obviously MVPs ourselves, but so just there's about four of them here. So they've changed the whole MVP timetable, but the one for March, Chris Gex, he's now Office Servers and Services MVP. I've got Nick Hogarth, I think he's pronounced, Enterprise Mobility. Nicholas Blumhart is another person, Visual Studio and Development Technologies. I'm apologizing if I'm getting these names incorrect. And another guy here, which I know, one of my colleagues, Stephen Hosking, he's been on the podcast prior as well, previously. He's got now MVP in Enterprise Mobility. So congratulations to those guys. Very well done, pat on the back. Also, one guy in New Zealand, which I'm not going to even attempt to pronounce that person's name. No Azure MVPs this time around, though.
Well, again, thank God for that. We can't have more Azure MVPs than we have now. Wouldn't that be a bit crowded on the podcast, wouldn't it?
Yeah, well, exactly.
All right, so you're all done. You're totally exhausted. Is there any more Azure news? Any more, possibly?
There's not, but what I wanted to do at some stage is talk about my experiences over the last week.
Do we have a choice?
Well, have you got any Office 365 news you want to cover first?
No, let's have your news. Let's keep going with Mark. Let's keep going with Mark. It's almost your podcast now, so let's keep going with Mark.
Okay, so basically last week I was looking at, those of you who follow me on Twitter may have recognized a few little language tweets going out. So Japanese or Chinese or whichever else, you've probably noticed those going out. Now, for that particular blog URL, I may have set up web automation for that. And so basically what happens is I have something like a web automation service monitoring a URL, like it's an RSS feed, okay, blogs.technet.microsoft.com, I think it is. And as soon as there's a new post with the word Azure in it, tweet it. It's simple as that. Now, it doesn't worry about the languages or anything else. And I didn't take that into consideration when I first set that up. And all of a sudden, I started getting all these languages tweeted, these different languages, because this is a global blog site for Microsoft, and all the Microsoft people around the world in Japan and so forth use it. And so people were sort of like, not really complaining, but people were mentioning that, hey, you're going in a different language all of a sudden again with your tweets. So I then started to have a look at the other alternatives. Now, we've talked about these on the podcast before. So there's Logic Apps and Microsoft Flow. Now, for those of you who sort of not exactly familiar, Logic Apps and Microsoft Flow are pretty much exactly the same thing. They're like an automated web automation platform, and I believe Microsoft Flow is free, and you just need a Microsoft account to account to sign in. You go to flow, I think, .microsoft.com, or Google search Microsoft Flow. There is also a awesome Microsoft Flow app, which is fully functional, which I was very surprised. I could lie in bed and set up my flows in bed and don't have to worry about sitting in front of the computer, which is also a big bonus too. So basically what I did and how I solved my problem was this. With Flow, same sort of deal, right? You can point it at a URL. It's blog.technet.microsoft.com. It's an RSS feed. It'll check it every 3, 2, 4 minutes, whatever you set it at, right? It'll check that RSS feed. As soon as a new post comes through, the difference with Flow, it has the benefit of using Microsoft Translator Service. It calls on these different services for Microsoft, and the Microsoft Translator Services has the option of detecting language, which is perfect for what I need. And so it checks the RSS feed for a new post, detects the language for the feed summary, which is the summary that I want. If it is equal to English, continue. And then there's another if down the bottom with Flow. It's all visual too, so there's no coding. There's another if. So if English, continue. And then if the title contains the word Azure, then go ahead and tweet. So I'm going to do up a video on it as well, because it took a little while to figure it out, the little idiosyncrasies of Microsoft Flow and the way it all sort of fits together with multiple if statements and things like that. So I'll do a little video. I'll chuck it on YouTube, put a link up, and I'll get it on the Channel 9 MSDN website as well.
Cool.
Do you have you used Flow or Logic Apps?
Use it all the time.
It's good stuff, isn't it?
Automation is what's going to separate us from the robots, because those that can program robots will be the masters. Those who can't, well, they're going to be the servants looking after and maintaining the robots. So learn how to automate and use your bots is my suggestion.
Yep. Get more stuff done.
Yeah, exactly.
And what about yourself? You've been away last week?
Well, a couple of things that I've been doing is, the first one, I have managed to pump out another CIA Ops Academy course on Skype for Business. So if you want to get into learning how to get up to speed with Skype for Business, there is a course that you can take from me. The other one that I've just started posting up is what I'm calling the Cloud Lecture Series. This one is a free course, and it basically takes presentations that I do around the place and aggregates them together into different little lessons. So I chop up presentations that I do into a shorter bite-sized pieces that you can consume. The important thing there is that you can subscribe for free. At the moment, I've got about 21 or 22 lessons up there and be adding them on a regular basis. So my advice to you is to go to the ciaopsacademy.com.au, head over to the Cloud Lecture Series, sign up, no cost, and you'll be able to see the lectures that are up there on covering Office 365, Azure, Business, all that sort of stuff, and watch out for new ones as they go up as well. So still in the midst of a round of boot camps for one of the vendors and getting out there and showing people Office 365 and also Azure, getting them interested, getting them hopefully started so that they can start deploying that for customers. So why don't we talk about some Office 365 news as well? So one of the things Microsoft...
Just a quick question. So with your with those presentations, you're obviously recording those presentations live, are you, with that little Rode microphone you've got?
Yeah, that's right. So I basically invested in a good quality microphone being from Rode, which is easy to travel with. You just tuck it away into your kit there and then whack it out, plug it into the phone, hit the record button, and it's a lapel mic, so it will record all the information, and the quality is really, really good. The only thing would be nice is obviously to get the questions from the room, but that's not obviously always possible. But certainly the ability to record my voice during a presentation is spectacular. So if you do want to hear that, you do want to see the quality, I certainly recommend that Rode lapel microphone. You can go and, again, have a look at, listen at my Cloud Lecture Series, and you'll see the quality of that microphone.
Excellent. And we're both using Rode now too, the NT USB microphones.
Yes, Mark has a bit of a spitzer if I don't use a Rode microphone. He doesn't like me using Plantronics or a headset, so we wouldn't want him to be any more vocal than he already is, would we, ladies and gentlemen?
Nope.
May I continue, Mr. Keeney?
Go for it.
Thank you. All right, so back on track with Office 365 news. It would seem to me as though somebody doesn't want me to even mention Office 365 in the podcast
hurry
anymore.
Up.
Microsoft has announced that a new Office 365 Administration Service Health dashboard has now gone GA, generally available. So it's updated the look and the feel, made it look prettier, and also indicated the incident. So it also has things like the user impact that something like an outage or an issue with one of the services will display for you. So again, worthwhile having a look, go into your the health status. Yammer is now integrating with Office 365 groups. Now, that's rolling out. So what we're seeing is that groups, I suppose, is changing over time, or has changed over time, has now become the security entity that groups uses in Office 365 together, and the connection is now being made to Yammer. So that means that you can a group can now have a Yammer location, it can have a Yammer network, it has then now links back into Office 365 resources, so the integration between Yammer and this Office 365 groups is certainly progressing. Very interesting in light of obviously the release of Teams. Done a lot of work recently with a number of organizations around Teams. The adoption of Teams is taken up very, very quickly by a lot of users. It fills a need for activity-based working, so it allows people to provision a conversation, channels that they can chat in, SharePoint, TeamSite, all sorts of stuff really quickly and easily. So one of the questions I get regularly is, okay, well, if that's happening with Teams, where does Yammer now fit in? So at the moment, Yammer does fill a specific role. I think that if you want a simplified social experience in your enterprise, then Yammer certainly fills the game there. But in other cases, if you want more than that, if you want an integrated environment for a group of people to work together on files, folders, chat, and all that sort of stuff, then look at Teams. So Yammer still has a place, still really like it, still use it a lot, still recommend that as the first thing for any migration for people to basically have a look at. The other thing Microsoft announced in Office 365 was that Visio Online Anywhere Access has now gone GA, I believe. So we can now go in and view our Visio diagrams. So we still need, obviously, the Visio program.
Full functionality on that?
Yeah, full functionality from what I can see. So again, it's very interesting that this sort of thing is beginning to gain interest in markets that probably didn't have access to Visio before. So there is a Visio license I think you can get from Office 365. And
what about the stencils?
Yep, yeah, I believe so. I mean, I haven't used it myself, so again, we'll put the link in the show notes there so people can have a look at the specific info. So if you are a Visio user, consumer, or you're big on Visio, certainly go in and have a look at that.
So if I have custom stencils, how would that work, adding them in?
Couldn't tell you because I haven't used it. So it's up and available. We'll put the link in the show notes for people like yourself to go
I'm just having a quick look now online and seeing. Yeah, okay. Wow. So this will work, obviously, in any browser, I'm guessing. It's probably HTML5, is it?
Yeah, it looks as though it is. It looks as though it certainly is doing that, and it works in any modern browser as Word, Excel, PowerPoint, OneNote, those sort of other Office applications work. Again, it's very full-featured from what I can see, so it should make a lot of people who use Visio full-time very happy, I think.
Here we go. It says here supported browsers, Firefox and Chrome is the... Oh, and Edge. So Edge, IE11, and Chrome are the best. Safari, unsupported.
Well, a lot of stuff doesn't actually run in Safari, we found in Office 365 these days, because I think it has some issues perhaps around security, I'm not sure, but I have noticed that some stuff does not run in Safari. So again, the Firefox, Chrome, Edge and IE are obviously your best options there, I would suggest. Now, another interesting...
What's the licensing? The licensing for the Visio, is it? It's not free, is it? It's part of Office 365?
I believe the viewer is free, obviously, so you can view the drives, but if you want to create, then you would need an appropriate license to do that.
Okay. Go on.
So one of the other interesting ones that I came across was a blog post on domain joining servers to Azure AD domain services from an Office 365 tenant. So we will put that in the show notes so people can have a look at it.
Yes.
So basically the idea here is what I like to speak to people about is the fact that the old way of controlling PCs was typically group policy. The new way is to use mobile device management. But as we know, Windows 10 at the moment is the only operating system that allows you to domain join directly to Azure AD and then also get mobile device management out of Office 365. So if you have older machines, Windows 8, Windows 7 and older servers, again, how do you connect those up into a domain that you've connected to Azure? You're going to need things like group policy, which means you will need the domain services function that is now available in Azure. So this blog post is quite comprehensive in that it takes you through step by step by step, showing you all the screenshots, how to set it all up, how to configure it, how to get it all working so you can connect your servers both on-prem and in the cloud, so your Azure VMs into domain services, and then use them as you would a network. So the idea is that Azure Domain Services allows you to run basically DCs, domain controllers, as a service. So you don't have to worry about running up your own domain controllers. You basically outsource that to Microsoft as a service. They worry about it, but you get all the goodies like domain join. You also get things like group policy. But as I mentioned, in the long run, I think that is going to be deprecated in favor of the mobile device management route. You do get a basic mobile device management components with Office 365 out of the box for free. And if you want to upscale and improve that, then you add something like Intune, which we have talked about with a number of people on the podcast about, to get that full experience and control. So again, some interesting information there. If you haven't looked at domain services, a great blog post to work your way through from end to end to give you a better idea of how to still use domain controllers, but not have to worry about installing them, managing them, and maintaining them.
Cool. So you got the high availability as well of Azure AD across the globe, and then you can sort of jump into it from wherever too. So web-based management rather than having to remote desktop to a server and manage it that way.
Well, you're still going to have to manage domain services using the standard MMC. So it's still going to be
very similar.
Does
that work, does it?
Yeah, absolutely. That's the way that you manage it. So it's old world stuff. So you can install that on a member server and then just then jump into...
Like a management server sort of thing. You just open it up like you do normally, and then the difference is it just connects to... Right.
Yeah, you point to the Microsoft managed domain controllers, so you get all the functionality. But you don't need to run a DC, manage the DC, maintain the DC, and scale the DC, which is the big thing. So, again, typically really around for legacy stuff, but a lot of people obviously still doing that. So have a look at Azure AD services. That blog post is a really good end-to-end walkthrough of how to configure it.
And just confirming too, it's not only Windows 10, it's also older servers like Windows Server 2008 R2, I'm guessing. Does it support that?
Yeah, but again, the whole idea here is Windows 10 is currently the only sort of machine that does a direct join to Azure AD. Servers and older workstations still need to do a domain join, the older domain join, which means they need a traditional domain controller to actually join the domain.
Okay. So with this, does Windows Server 2016
That's a good question. I haven't got a 10. Specific answer on that. I believe that it does, but I'm not sure if it does it out of the box. But the expectation
because I asked Gino a few podcast episodes ago, and he wasn't too sure either.
So I don't think they've announced it as yet. I don't. I think it's coming, but as yet not into general availability. So we expected to see it with Server 2016, but as yet not there. So we'll obviously get somebody on the podcast to have a chat about it when we get some more details on it.
Here we go. Azure Active Directory. So here we go. Running. This article shows how to join a virtual machine running Windows Server 2012 R2 to an Azure AD Domain Services Managed Domain. This is Windows Server 2012 R2.
Yeah, so a lot of different ways of doing it. So we'll put any of that we find, we'll put in the show notes. So the last thing that I've got here before we do wrap up is a link to a blog post on generating some random content for SharePoint. So the idea here is perhaps you want to do a demo, perhaps you want to put some information in there to get some idea of the size, the capacity, the scaling. There is a blog post here that will speak in PowerShell, which is something that my friend over there on the other side of the microphone will love. And we'll go in and create some random content in SharePoint for you. So handy little utility to have, again, to be a PowerShell expert. What do you need to be a PowerShell expert, Mark?
Your name has to be Mark Keane. No, I'm kidding. I'm not an expert.
No, that's not. That is not correct. You have failed that question. You only need to know 2 keyboard commands to be considered to be as expert as yourself. What are those 2 keyboards?
Get help.
No.
Get help and Stack Overflow.
No. Control C, Control V. All you do is copy and paste, rip somebody else's off, make a slight modification, and away you go. So,
NF8.
The good thing about PowerShell is that obviously it's in the public domain. So, again, nice and easy to use. Have a look at that. We'll put the blog post in the show notes. But I think we're probably drawing to the end of this episode. We don't want to keep people too, I suppose, on the hook about all the stuff that's happening, because there's a lot to take in. More stuff obviously coming. Anything else from you, Mark?
No, but you've got to get up early in the morning. You've got a flight to catch.
Well, these are the requirements when you do have to go out and to help people understand Azure. So, again, we do need to get on with things. I do need to pack my gym jams and make sure that I've got my toothbrush ready so that...
living the high life.
Yeah, exactly right, so that I can undress when I go through the metal detector and get dressed on the other side after getting swiped for gunpowder. So, always an enjoyable thing.
Because you love travelling, don't you?
Well, I can't say that I do, because it seems to get rather sick of late, so we might have to adopt the Japanese tradition of wearing masks on planes, but we'll see how we go. I think I'll survive, so we'll report back, obviously, on the next episode, let you know how everything goes. But don't forget from me to have a look at that Getting Started with Skype for Business, and also my free cloud lecture series, plenty of lessons. So the stuff I'll be doing next week, I'll be recording and pumping up there. And again, you can find that, both of those, at ciaopsacademy.com.au. Anything from you would like ladies and gentlemen to have a look at besides your Twitter feed and your blog?
No, but we will mention too for the podcast, it's the 2 URLs. So basically it's podcasts.needtoknow.cloud is a URL to go to list all of the episodes. We're also on iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, all that sort of stuff as well. If you have any feedback for us, email us at feedback@needtoknow.cloud. That's a nice easy one. And we are on Twitter, which is at N2K Podcast. Also, we're on Facebook as well. I don't like Facebook, but lots of people do. So anyway, the Facebook link is, what is it, Rob? It's N2K Podcast as
exactly
well, isn't
the same, it? Yes. So it's Facebook/N2K Podcast. The good thing about Facebook is we can have an ongoing conversation, ask questions, make suggestions for the show. So encourage people to do that as well, and again, join the community there. But you can always tweet at us directly. You can also tweet to the show, and we appreciate those people who have retweeted some of the recent stuff from our Ignite sessions, that seemed to be was well received. Lots of great info, and the new intro, the new beginning of our podcast has been well received. Thanks, Mark, once again for his hard work artistic ability in putting that together.
Bit of creativeness, sort of sitting in the office one day and getting a bit bored doing what I was doing, and I thought I'd do something different.
It's amazing what a bottle of wine and half a bottle of vodka will do for you. So there you go. Lucid Dreaming from Mark Keane has produced the latest intro to the Need to Know podcast. But I think with that, before we go down the rabbit hole that we may not get back out of, I think it's time to call an end to this episode of the Need to Know podcast. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
You have been listening to the Need to Know podcast from CIA Ops. For training on using technologies like SharePoint Online or Office 365, visit www.ciaopsacademy.com. By purchasing from the selection available, you'll be directly supporting this podcast. To provide feedback on this episode, visit www.ciaops.com/contact. This podcast is voiced and produced by me, Mark Keane.